Given that today agreed a timeline and a process for responding to the recommendations of the Welfare Working Group, the report generated 43 wide-ranging recommendations for welfare reform aimed at improving the incentives in the welfare system and reducing the number of New Zealanders who depend on the government for their income. I'm strongly committed to improving New Zealand's welfare system so that it does more to encourage personal responsibility and to support people into paid employment. I'm not satisfied, and I believe many New Zealanders are not satisfied, that our current welfare system performs as well as it should. The welfare systems should send a consistent message that if you can work and support yourself, then you must. The Welfare Working Group's work showed that it's not doing enough to send that message. That's not fair on hard-working taxpayers. It's not fiscally affordable. But more than that, it's not fair on beneficiaries who end up falling far short of their potential. And it's not fair to the hundreds of thousands of children who grow up in welfare-dependent households. Together with my Cabinet colleagues, I'm enthusiastic about the potential for improvement as described by the Welfare Working Group. I'm ambitious for what we can achieve in this area. Cabinet has asked officials to give careful consideration to each of the group's recommendations as we develop a comprehensive package of welfare reform. With one exception, however, we will not give further consideration to a specific recommendation which would require mothers to return to work at 14 weeks after having a second child on the benefit. As I said at the time, I feel somewhat uneasy about that length of time. While in due course, we may well wish to consider an appropriate timescale, 14 weeks is out of consideration. A ministerial working group has been formed to steer this policy development, and officials will report to that group regularly over the next few months. As we move toward our welfare reform, we will not lose sight of our goal of providing support to the most vulnerable and needy New Zealanders. However, the proportion of the working age population on benefits has increased from 2% to 13% since 1970. I think New Zealanders would take some convincing that that increase is justified. The government is looking for a balanced approach that marries improved incentives to work with better support where it's warranted. The Cabinet expects to sign off on a comprehensive package of welfare reform prior to the election. We will announce these policies in due course and will campaign on implementing them. Now, in terms of the budget, you will all have noticed the three opinion polls in recent days taken in the wake of the budget. I think there's a general acceptance of what the government is trying to do. Our aims have been clearly laid out. The budget sets out the next steps in the government's plan to get its own books in order and to build faster growth and more jobs based on savings and exporting, rather than borrowing and excessive government spending. Households and businesses are already moving in that direction themselves by saving a bit more and paying down their own debt. That's why I think the public generally understand the government's program. As I said before, most New Zealanders are realistic about what needs to be done. They appreciate the leadership this government is providing on things that really matter. On the other hand, they are wary of expensive political promises that would add billions of dollars to our foreign debt. The government took some difficult decisions in Budget 2011, but they were balanced and considered decisions that needed to be made. We do not take the support we've received from the public for granted, and we never will. And we will be working hard to continue to try to take people with us and explain our policies and our reasons for them very clearly. In terms of my activity this week, tomorrow and part of Wednesday, I'm visiting New Plymouth before coming back to Wellington to attend a Rugby World Cup 100 Days to Go event at the Grand Hall. On Thursday, I'm in Invercargill. On Friday, I'm at the Rodney Electorate. And I should just also note that on Wednesday, Sir Peter Gluckman will be releasing a report on improving outcomes for young people as they transition from childhood to adulthood.
Are you supportive of anything new way of the idea of pre-funding the welfare obligations so you set aside all the money which outlined in the welfare working group report? to fund the future obligations of WellFeed?
Well, look, I wouldn't want to go into the specifics of that today or any real recommendations that the Wellfield Working Group made. What I would say is I think the current system's broken and it's not working. When you have an increase from 2% of the working age population in 1970 to 13% today, I think that tells us that there are too many New Zealanders of working age on a benefit and we need reform of that system. Now, what the structure of that reform is something we'll leave as we work through with our ministers. And so that we'll campaign on, but I don't want to get into the individual specific policies today.
What was your thought process around rolling out the 14 weeks?
Look, I think 14 weeks is just a little bit too quick. I mean, I felt uneasy about that. I think a lot of New Zealanders would. We'll need to consider that issue of when people have additional children on the DPV, what that might mean and what obligations might fall on them. So I'm not ruling out a timescale where people need to return to work, but I think 14 weeks is just on the too short a side.
When do you stop seeing those calendars? Would that 6 months, 8 months?
Yeah, again, I don't want to run those policies through this press conference today. I'm happy to do it at another press conference in due course. And that's genuinely because the Cabinet hasn't considered those. The Cabinet has obviously read the Welfare Working Group report. It understands the wide range of recommendations that are being made and certainly understands the basic theory here, which is that we think the system has to support the most vulnerable and those that are in need, but it also has to be affordable and there has to be a degree of personal responsibility in the system. And I think we're getting to the point where that is not the case in the current system. It's sending the wrong messages and quite simply it's not delivering the right outcomes either for the taxpayers who are paying for it or those that are the beneficiaries as a result of the system.
You were going to announce a policy response a lot earlier.
Yep.
I presume that the time lag between the report coming out and now, you think that this is electorally advantageous to National, you're quite keen to make a campaign for that.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. I mean, you'll appreciate the report was released on the 22nd of February, so the day that the second earthquake took place in Christchurch, and that's consumed a lot of Cabinet's time. By the time we got through at least the heavy lifting in that process, we were moving into the budget process. But I do think it's important that we signal to New Zealanders that if we're afforded the second term, that there will be reform in welfare. You know, I want people to get an understanding of the balance of that. It's not about being punitive. I think, you know, that's always the risk of a government, that it just looks like it's doing solely for the sake of saving money, although I would point out that welfare currently costs about $8 billion a year. But I think the real issue here is making sure we have the right incentives and deliver the right outcomes for everybody, those that are paying for it and those that are in the system.
That group, Welfare Working Group, though, said that you would have to spend money.
Correct.
Are you prepared to do that?
I am, and I'm not ruling out the fact that we will need to spend money, I think in areas like early childhood education and training, to transition people into work. But the basic theme of the report is that if you can work, then you should work. Now, obviously, there are a group of New Zealanders for which work will not be possible. And we acknowledge that, and the welfare system should be there to support them, actually with integrity. But my view is that there are too many New Zealanders who are not in that system for the right reasons. Actually, they could be working, and we need to encourage them into work. And look, we've seen some quite interesting results when we've made very minor changes. Remember, as a government, we instituted the change where after 12 months of being on long-term unemployment benefit, you had to re-register. That saw about 25% of all people who were registered as long-term unemployed falling off the system. And so I think that just shows you that it's quite possible for the government to make some changes and achieve good results. Now, we'll need to do more than that, and I acknowledge that. And as I say, it'll very much be one that's done with a balanced view, not at all unsympathetic to those that find themselves on welfare. There's a lot of hard luck stories and genuine cases. But there's also just fundamentally over 300,000 New Zealanders of working age on a benefit and over 220,000 children being supported by those beneficiary-based households. Too many New Zealanders are finding themselves in what is a, you know, as Michael Joseph Savage once famously said, not an armchair ride to prosperity.
So about the working group, they have too many people.
Sorry, one more time, Rebecca.
Who are those people? You know, you said there's too many people that are on the bench for the wrong reason. Who are they, in your mind?
Well, it's people that can work, but where the system is not encouraging them to work. And so we need to look at that. There's obviously a number of benefit categories, and in some areas that's very challenging and it won't be possible. But all of the work we've done has identified that some people can undertake part-time work, some people will be able to undertake full-time work, and it's important that we give them the skills and the opportunity to participate in work.
But don't you find that to be your problem if it's no jobs to go into?
Yeah, I don't accept that line. I mean, firstly, there's about 1,500 jobs a week currently coming into work and income. So there are jobs out there. We see a lot of people who come into a work and income office who actually never actually go on a benefit. They're triaged into employment. The budget quite clearly spells out that there'll be about 170,000 jobs created over the next 4 years. We're not talking about instant reform of the welfare system. So I think, you know, we can get to a position where more New Zealanders are engaged in work.
Are you thinking of taking much of the line of people who turn down work? I'm thinking in particular of areas like horticulture, which are reporting that they can't get work.
That's right. So all of those things are on the table. And I think we need to look at what will work. I think, in fairness, it's a carrot and stick approach.
What's your general view of the working group?
Well, look, I thought they actually took a thoughtful view to it. I mean, they certainly came up with some interesting ideas. Some of them are more controversial than others. We accept that. And as I say, with the exception of the 14-week stand-down period, you know, that's why we don't want to take things off the table. We do want to go away and have a thoughtful, considered view. And I think we understand that that welfare reform doesn't just sit with the responsibility of the Ministry of Social Development. It also falls into other areas that will have to play a part.
So nothing else is off the table. Correct. One of the other controversial ideas was providing free, long-term, reversible contraception to people who are welfare.
Yeah, well, all of those things have to be considered. As I say, there'll be a package of initiatives. I don't want to second guess what those will be today, but let's just see where we get to. But we are committed to seeing less New Zealanders dependent on welfare. That will mean a cheaper cost for the country, but hopefully also mean a better life for a whole lot of people who are currently trapped on welfare. And we need to give them the skills and the opportunity, should I say, to transition into work.
So the working group, they said there are two fundamental changes. One was the single benefit
being, correct,
and also the new agency to implement all,
yep,
of this. Are those a given that they'll be picked up?
No, again, I wouldn't want to second guess that. I mean, the idea of a single benefit is to say, look, that's a starting point. There are distortions within the welfare system at the moment, or beneficiary categories, which may encourage people to transition onto one benefit than another. I think the Welfare Working Group, from memory, said that that can be resolved with top-ups and add-ons in different areas that might make sense, but a single benefit they thought would be beneficial. In terms of another agency, I mean, again, you're aware that the government was looking at public sector reform. That doesn't stop us potentially establishing a new agency if we really believe that was the right way to go, but it does mean that we need to be absolutely convinced it's going to be more efficient. You know, I wouldn't want to second guess that today.
So do you believe there's enough jobs out there, or there will be enough jobs out there for all those people to get off the benefit?
Over time, yes, and look, not clearly when you have about 360,000 people of working age on benefit, quite clearly not all of them are going to get into paid employment. I think the ambition from the Welfare Working Group was to take that number over time down to 250,000 people. But I think we can help people to get into work. And there are jobs out there, and increasingly as the economy picks up, there'll be more opportunities. And I think, in fairness to those that find themselves on benefits, often one of the reasons that they find it more and more difficult is the longer they're on a benefit, the more dislocated they are from all of those work skills, all of those contacts that people have, the confidence that people have. This is a two-way street here. We've actually got to make sure that we help people. And as I've always said, you know, I think you judge a society by the way you look after the sick and the vulnerable, but you've also got to make sure you don't have a society that is creating people that are dependent on the state, and I think to a certain degree we've been doing that.
But that target, that will surely be reached. I mean, if you've got the economy really going, I mean, that would simply soak up those people anyway without any reform of the welfare system anyway?
Well, it may or may not. I mean, obviously, if you look at the unemployment benefit numbers at the moment, they're sitting at about 60,000, so that of itself wouldn't be enough. I think the Welfare Working Group has established that there's been a disproportionate increase in sickness and invalids beneficiary numbers, and, you know, over time, quite a consistently high level of people on the DPB. Now, again, we'll need to look at all of those different categories. So I don't think just a growing economy will fix it.
But if you take the previous from the time it came into power till just before it left power, it started to go up in the last few months.
But yep.
some benefit numbers have dropped by close to a third. So, yep. You know, on the back of that third.
It's true, but also what we did see, though, and we have to acknowledge there were very low levels of unemployment in New Zealand, but what we also saw at that time was quite a significant increase in other categories. And
well, I've talked total benefit numbers.
Yeah, yeah, but primarily because unemployment benefit numbers were very, very low. So overall, we think the system needs a bit of work.
Thank you, Ron. Again, for the very specific nature of the job growth, and even I imagine a lot of those new jobs, for example, being in Christchurch. You know, we've got unemployment in Auckland, youth unemployment, that's not necessarily going to fix that problem.
Well, there's a number of category issues, and again, they all need to be addressed. No one's saying this is a simple task. You're right, you know, there's higher levels of youth unemployment, there's higher levels of Māori unemployment and Pacific unemployment. They all require a different approach. And as I say, it's not just a matter of the government being punitive, it is a matter of the government taking a sensible approach and understanding what tools and skills are required to transition people into work.
What do you think why do you think it was that the polling weekend by three different New York showed that despite people not necessarily liking the cuts in the budget, that the support for the government remains relatively high.
Well, I think largely people are very conscious of the times that we find ourselves in. They know that we need to pay for Christchurch. I think they do know that this is the time for the government to be conservative and get its books back in order. I think New Zealanders highly value the fact that they want a government with a strong set of accounts. And the fact that if by about 2013-14 we can be back into surplus or a neutral position, I think we'll be one of only three OECD countries that find themselves in that position. And I think, if anything, the Christchurch earthquakes showed us that the government needs to be in a position where it can afford to respond. And racking up debt that we expect future New Zealanders to pay for is not a sensible approach. So it was, as I said on Budget Day, a budget for the times. It's consistent with what New Zealanders are doing with their own household budgets. And I think that was reflected through the polling support that the government's enjoying.
John Whitehead said at the weekend that our guys to the Treasury that he and Treasury was concerned about the higher levels of inequality in New Zealand's
Look, they've written a number of reports recently. You've also seen that they're looking at, they've released a report that looks not just at GDP per capita, but other indicators of whether people are getting ahead and feeling as though they're part of society. Are we deeply unequal? I'm not so sure, actually, that's right. I mean, I'd need to have a look at it relative to other countries, and I haven't had... Yeah, I haven't had a really good look, you know, apples and apples comparison there. I mean, if you take New Zealand's welfare system for a start off, as we've just been discussing, I mean, that's universally accepted as a more generous scheme in New Zealand than many other countries. So at one end of the scale, you could say New Zealand's arguably providing more support for a lot of people. If you go and have a look at the taxes on our average income, I think it's either the IMF or the OECD is about to come out and say that New Zealand has one of the lowest levels of tax on average income. And that's because of Working for Families, which in tough times the government's continued to support. At the higher end, yes, of course, we have some New Zealanders that earn very large incomes, but relative to the United States or even Australia, where a bank CEO in New Zealand might get $3 or $4 million, then $16 million in Australia, I'm not quite sure that range is as deep as other countries.
So you're not worried about it?
Well, look, what I don't worry about one thing, and that is that if some New Zealanders do very well and enjoy high incomes, you know, personally, as a government, I want to support those people because I think that they go out there and create lots of employment. I worry a lot about those New Zealanders that have low or modest incomes because that makes life very difficult for them. So in terms of closing the gap, I want to do that by lifting up those on the lowest incomes if we can. Now, we've done that, I believe, by reforming the tax system. I mean, again, you know, very low levels of taxation, but also ultimately it's about growing opportunities for New Zealanders. Yeah, there's only so much you can do through the tax system or through a tax credit system. Ultimately, it's about providing those skills and those opportunities.
Going back to welfare for a moment, that 2% from the 1970 to 13% now, that ignores the introduction of DPP in the 1970s.
Sure.
What contribution in percentage terms has the DPP made to those figures? Because I wouldn't want it to you intimate that the 2% was some kind of golden era which we should be returning?
Well, that thing around arguing we're going back to 2%. I mean, from the last time I looked, there's around about 100,000 people on the DPB benefit, of about 350,000-360,000 New Zealanders on the benefit, so you can go and do the maths of that. But you can see that it's a proportion. But whatever way you look at it, and whatever the makeup is, the question we have to ask ourselves is, A, is it sustainable to have so many people on a benefit? Secondly, is it affordable? And if we do have too many people on benefit-based incomes, then why is it that that's happening, and are we sending them all of the right signals and giving them all of the right opportunities? As I say, this is not about being punitive, but it is about saying what's sustainable, what's fair, and what's delivering the best outcomes. And I think most New Zealanders would say 13% of New Zealanders of working age on a benefit is not sustainable and not affordable.
Do you think some of them are making a lifestyle choice, and if so, what sort of percentage are we talking?
Well, I think the time for getting into sort of, you know, subjective comments about that sort of stuff is over. I mean, from the government's point of view, we look at the numbers, we look at the outcomes, and we look at the current structure of the welfare system, and we say, look, it needs reform. And what we're going to put on the table is a set of reforms and ask New Zealanders to endorse them come the election.
Yeah, so can I ask you, from our poll, people seem to be split on whether or not that speaks to you as they change it. How do you interpret those?
Yeah, so what I would say is, you know, the poll is reflecting, for those that are saying, you know, that changes shouldn't have occurred, some disappointment, and I acknowledge that, but I think also New Zealanders reflect that this is a budget for the times, and where the government is putting in half of the contributions going into a KiwiSaver account, I think most people acknowledge that's not sustainable. And I think if you look at what the private sector commentators are saying about KiwiSaver, they're still saying it's going to be a very effective scheme that people should be a member of. They're likely to stay in the scheme, and I think that's a good thing, and I think we've now put the scheme on an affordable and sustainable plan.
The polls show that Don Brash didn't get much of a lift at all with the ACT Party. Do you think that the ACT Party might want to think about turning the body high?
I wouldn't want to speak that. I've got enough things on my plate without worrying about that.
The New Zealand dollar today, sorry, that a record high. Yeah. Can you see anything in the medium term future which might bring it down from these levels?
Well, again, I mean, my days of sort of speculating or considering those matters are sort of somewhat behind me, but I mean, look, the reason, in my view, that the New Zealand dollar is trading at such high levels against the US is because of inherent weakness in the US. It's because of the size of the deficit in the United States of America and the enormous amount of debt that that economy is producing, and the fact that that debt is being funded through quantitative easing. And in the short term, that is proving to be very challenging.
How much time do you think the New Zealand dollar can
go? I don't know. Look, I mean, you're in uncharted territory, so that's of some concern. I mean, there's a good news, bad news part of the story for many of our exporters. There is an imported component of what they export, so that reduces that price. For New Zealand consumers, it takes the pressure off oil prices and imported goods. And for commodity-based exporters, life is a bit more bearable because obviously commodity prices have been high. For those going to Australia, it's good. But I think we all acknowledge that for the manufacturer that's in a non-commodity linked area selling into a US dollar based market, these are levels that are not sustainable.
The recent moves in the dollar, though, seem to suggest that it's more of New Zealand plus story rather than a US negative story, because the three jumps on the back of good local data, trade today,
yep.
Chinese investment last week,
Fonterra stuff. Yeah, well, trade was at a record high, and that's good news. Look, I mean, on one hand, I think we delivered a budget that the international markets would say they would like to see in their own countries. And at the end of the day, we're returning to surplus. We're holding debt at under 30% of GDP. We're anticipating good wage growth and job growth. That's one of the reasons why I think New Zealanders, by and large, notwithstanding the cuts that they're having to make, are supportive of the budget. But, I mean, obviously we just have concerns about that very high New Zealand US exchange
rate. Isn't the high dollar been part of the government's support as well, because you're auctioning off record amount of treasury bonds?
Well, look, I mean, there's lots of ways of looking at this. The other argument you could say is that, you know, we've been taking, I think, very prudent steps to get the books back in order, and that's likely to see interest rates stay, you know, lower for longer. It doesn't mean that there won't be a cycle. Of course, there'll be a cycle when this economic growth picks up. Naturally, you expect interest rates to rise. But we think, relative to what is proposed by Labor, we can keep interest rates lower than them, and we're at, you know, low since that we haven't seen since 1964.
But the dollar, there wouldn't be so much demand for New Zealand dollars if you weren't putting out some.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think in the final analysis, this is largely a US dollar story than a New Zealand dollar story. There are bits that are encouraging the international markets. That's a positive. As I say, New Zealanders will pay for less, pay less at the pump than they otherwise would do, so that's a good news part of the story.
What's the RBNZ's view on prudential at the moment? Have you had any discussions with them or advice from them recently on that?
We haven't changed our position. I haven't had any discussions with them.
But you said you're concerned, and their policy previously was to take the top,
yep,
the edges off the high dollar, if you like.
They have the independence. They have the independence to do that. It just wouldn't be appropriate for me to give them guidance.
Well, it's overwhelming that people in our comp that they weren't going to leave KiwiSaver. Do you think that makes them sort of satisfied and concerned that there is still some credit?
Yes, and that's because if you look at it, even with the changes we're making, by the end of the savings period that people enjoy when they're in the scheme, whatever that might be, because it varies by age, they'll still end up with more in their account than they otherwise would do. Now, it's true, they're putting a bit more of that in themselves, so they're making a short-term sacrifice, but it's still a very good scheme and a great nest egg. And I think New Zealanders should stay committed to KiwiSaver. There's 1.7 million people in the scheme, 20,000 joining a month, and I think it's still a very valuable scheme.
Should it be compulsory?
Look, that's a matter for another day. We did not, you know, give that overly undue consideration. In the end, if we'd done that, it would have increased the cost of the Crown, and we were trying to reduce costs at the time.
And I've seen more reports of delays to trace people in particular in Christchurch and payments for the EPC. Have you had any advice on that?
Yeah, look, I mean, that issue has been raised to me when I've been on the ground in Christchurch, and I know that's an issue that Gerry Brownlee is taking up with EQC. I think in fairness to EQC, they are processing a lot of claims. The advice I've had is that they've received 28,900 invoices, but still 10,000 of them are to be paid. I mean, my only point is that while I accept that they need to do their job properly and make sure that they satisfy that the invoices should be paid and that they're properly costed and all of that, there is pressure on the system, and I do want to see them paying as fast as they possibly can. In the end, you've got a lot of quite small tradespeople working out of these Fletcher hubs, and they don't have big overdrafts, and they're employing a lot more people. So we need that cash flowing through the system, and we've been giving every encouragement to EQC to get those bills paid.
The business package for Christchurch businesses ends,
yes,
tomorrow or something.
Correct, tomorrow.
You've given no consideration to extending that to some businesses?
No, look, I think at the end of the day, I accept and acknowledge that, again, there'll be some businesses will not be as well positioned to transition out of that as others. But I do think that that package, which added up in the orders of hundreds of millions of dollars, was an appropriate package for the time, but eventually it was to buy people time to restructure their business. And at some point it always had to come to an end. We scaled it down so that people had that knowledge and could work around that. And I think for most people now, they're getting quite a small payment, relatively speaking, but unquestionably will affect some businesses, I accept that. Okay, see you later.